Dude, you just shit on a Goonie. What are you doing? Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt. And did you know that reality television shows are not actual reality?
I am shocked and appalled at this manipulation.
I know. It's like totally mind-blowing, right?
You found another great one for us, Jamie.
Do not question my gift.
You found Frankenfake, which is a documentary that follows a guy named Joe Castro, and he didn't have a great experience, but he has decided that this experience is basically going to define the rest of his life.
That is a really good summation of it. I sort of noted that Joe Castro is apparently a special effects artist that has worked on movies I've neither seen nor heard of.
He has a number of movies and shorts to his director credit. I think most of the like 16, 18 things are all kind of in that 2.5 to 4 stars out of 10 rating area on IMDb.
So really excellent films that were Oscar worthy.
Well, maybe his special effects is better than his directing chops, but watching this documentary is not inspiring me to go look for more of his oeuvre.
I did go and look for some of his work, and I would describe it as and I feel like we should also disclaim that we watched at least a couple episodes of the show Face Off, but if you've seen anything like Project Runway or, you know, any number of those type of voting people off reality shows, you get the premise of Face Off.
I knew what the show was, but I had no idea who this guy was.
I would say, imagine that you are friends with someone who is like an acquaintance on Facebook, and maybe they have some sort of interaction that is displeasing to them. And so they write like a really lengthy rant about it and like start tagging random people that they have beefs with that may or may not be connected to the incident in question. And then you make that into a documentary and you have Frankenfake.
Yeah. Joe made this to try to defend himself and prove his position and show that everyone else who quote-unquote wronged him really did wrong him. Here's Exhibit A.
Sort of exhibits A through quadruple Z.
Yeah, A through we've run out of letters. So besides Joe, one of the main people that we're going to hear about is Dwight, who is the executive producer of the show. There's a woman named Sion, who is a casting slash story producer. And then there are a couple of Joe's friends. One of them is Jerry and one of them is Roy. And Jerry was a contestant on season 2 of the show. And so that's kind of what connected Joe into the show.
But he does point out that these are his two best friends of over 25 years. And he makes reference to that over and over and over and over and over again.
He also, from the very first mention of these people, Joe says that Jerry is a known pedophile and Roy is a known adulterer. Soon after they say that, the narrator, he says,
"You may say to yourself, why was Joe friends with a pedophile like Jerry Macaluso and an adulterer like Roy Kinnearum? Well, Joe did not know his friends were this way until the investigation began after the tragic events that unfolded on Face Off."
They also put this slide up where like Roy, it was like he had a 400-pound shut-in wife with 2 kids, but he lives with his mistress.
Yes.
And I'm not quite sure what that has to do with the premise of the documentary, which is that Face Off screwed Joe Castro.
Yeah. And I almost think we should just jump into like where they start from, like the actual chronology of how this story happened.
I agree.
This is the documentary that Dwight D. Smith, Sci-Fi, and NBC Universal don't want you to see because it will reveal the truth about their show and in turn ruin their syndication.
I guess these shows show up on Netflix and stuff like that, but...
I really can't see a Netflix executive watching this and being like, this guy has a really good point.
This is like the kind of show that just gets bundled in with a bunch of other garbage.
Like it's part of Sci-Fi's deal. Here's just like their back catalog.
Yeah. Joe starts by walking through who the judges are for this show. The thing that he starts alleging is that like contestants end up getting favoritism or future jobs or things like that from some of these people. Except for Patrick. Patrick Tatopoulos is the one judge that Joe apparently idolizes because Patrick worked on Godzilla.
Godzilla is an image and a shining example of Joe's childhood and his dream to become a special effects artist and motion picture director. Godzilla was the first film he was able to view as a young man that inspired him to be a visionary to bring all walks of life together.
Godzilla is about a massive monster destroying things.
Everybody's singing campfire songs while Godzilla's roasting some s'mores.
Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya.
I think we're all equally dead under the eyes of Godzilla.
That makes sense.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. So Jerry tells Joe about the audition and that the producers are going to be waiting for him, and he kind of smooths the road, and Joe goes and meets with them, and they're super friendly, and he's going to be on the show. But the first big hang-up happens when it comes to signing contracts, so much so that we get a reenactment about signing of contracts.
He's all about how Sci-Fi has altered footage and changed things so that he looks bad, but then he does reenactments, which are solely based on his recollection of conversations. They're also like really badly acted.
I wonder if they're like a recurring troupe that he uses in his films.
Oh, maybe. I would love to know what they got paid for this. And do they have SAG cards? We also in this scene get like a random tour of a hotel. Like this is the hotel room where they had me sign things. And it's like, generic hotel room number 34. Mm-hmm. This is the lobby where I stood and asked for things.
And one of his big points is that he wanted copies of his contract. He never got them. They could have gone across the parking lot, literally just across the parking lot to a Staples.
Right.
Sion keeps pressuring him. And one of the reenactment pieces that we get is her saying,
"Come on, Joe, sign them. Don't you trust me?"
It's basically Ursula from The Little Mermaid holding up the contract for Ariel and giving her the pen and forcing her to sign it. That's how he makes it out to be.
Yeah.
And he's like, mentions that he was skeptical about going on the show to begin with. It's like, he says that he knew it was rigged in season one and that he was skeptical in season two because no names were winning.
He knew it was bullshit, but then as soon as he was involved, he was like, oh, well, since they want me, obviously this is legit.
Right. This season, they actually want the best in the industry.
Right. They want me. But then the other sketchy thing that happens, which is very important, he plays it off like he was just making small talk while he's signing.
So, is there anybody that's interesting on this season I should know about?
Actually, there is a girl named Laura Tyler. I think it's about time a girl wins this season.
That is presented as evidence.
Yes. So he gets on the show, and the first challenge, they're doing all this work.
When I looked over and saw every other competitor's work, it looked like, to me, a sea of clones, a sea of copycats, a sea of school curriculum work. My work was the only one that was truly original.
All the other contestants are losers, according to Joe. And that is presented as fact.
Well, it's important to assert this because Joe comes in last place in this first challenge, which has the guest judge, Sean Austin.
Right.
And Joe says that Sean was fed lines through an earpiece for what to say for his critique, and that Sean was also busy flirting with one of the hosts.
Again, presented as fact.
Like, dude, you just shit on a Goonie. What are you doing?
He shit on a guy that spent 10 hours walking to Mordor. We don't do that. We don't shit on hobbits. How dare you, sir?
Right. So Joe's judged as the bottom look by Sean, and the next challenge that they have is to make an alien that looks like it would belong at the Star Wars cantina, but it has to be an original alien. It can't be something that looks like it was already filmed.
Right. You have to use your creativity to create this character.
Yes, and they have to work in pairs. So Joe gets assigned to work with this guy named Tommy, who Joe says has no real special effects experience. And then that night, Tommy and Joe get in a big fight, and Tommy spits in his face, which is supposed to be against the rules, but Tommy doesn't get kicked off. And it's like, okay, I made the right decision to not get into this show.
Well, I do think it's important to note that the whole confrontation with Tommy is another reenactment.
Tommy, look, I'm inside the bedroom and I can hear you talking shit about me and I wanted to stop right now.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean what I'm talking about? You're out here lying to everybody about what really...
That's bullshit. I didn't say anything about you.
You're out here lying to everybody about what really happened today and it's bullshit.
I didn't say anything about you.
Dude, I can hear you from inside the
bedroom. That's bullshit. I didn't say anything. Do you have a problem with me, huh?
But he also refers to the women on the show as girls, and I would like to state for the record, never trust a man who refers to women as females or girls.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Not a good look.
This whole thing is not a good look for Joe. The next day, Joe starts working on the molds, and Tommy, he says, screwed up and locked them together, and they couldn't get things out, and then they had a bunch of problems with the model, and they use this as one of the examples of how the producers are taking footage and audio that aren't connected and crafting them together in ways to create artificial reality.
And this is quite an autopsy on this one snippet of video. They break it down frame by frame.
He only says the word nice, and the word be is taken from the log and put into his reaction. But in reality, when Joe places his prosthetic with the back of the head, it looked great. And Tommy only said the word nice, complimenting Joe on a job well done. That's another tactic that editors use in reality television.
Because I can't breathe it.
It'd be nice.
His playing and replaying and replaying of this clip does not really quote unquote prove anything.
No, it's tedious.
It's very tedious.
Another team has done a look that Joe says went against the rules of the competition because they made a devilish character. And Joe says, well, there was a devilish character at the cantina. And there was, but they look nothing alike.
Not at all. They are entirely different. But meanwhile, Joe and Tommy sent their model down the runway in flip-flops. So he didn't even complete the look.
And he says it's because the model refused to wear the boots because they were uncomfortable.
Again, there's no evidence for that.
And it doesn't seem very likely. Like, she's a model.
Right.
I don't know. So Tommy and Joe are in the bottom. And this is what he says.
So I thought to myself, you know what? I have a career in the industry. I had been working for this industry for 23 years. I had been working in this industry longer than anybody on the show. I came there and did what I set out to do. I taught a young man some skills that he would never, ever, ever have gotten.
Really?
He is a paragon of talent. He's really, really, he should be a judge on this show. That's how good he is.
He doesn't just, like, gracefully resign. He, like, runs off from the set.
And, like, flailing his arms as he runs.
Yeah, out onto the street where he says he was chased for 4 miles as they filmed him.
But we never see this film footage.
No. And then he finds a payphone. In complete hysterics, he calls his partner Steve.
I mean, he sounds unhinged.
Here's where things really start to go off the rails for me.
And it started out off the rails. Now we're on a totally different train.
I was kind of just bored at this point. Now, from here on out, I get more and more pissed off. Because you would think, like, okay, this guy had a bad experience on a reality TV show. You know, the end.
And what happens next is sort of the equivalent of somebody, like, flipping a table, then setting the table back up and flipping it again over and over and over.
Yeah. The first thing that we see, he plays us a phone call from Sean Hogan, who is the psychologist from the show. And what we're told is to listen to how this guy is trying to get Joe to forget about what the producers did to him.
Hey, Joe, it's Dr. Hogan calling. Sorry about everything you've been going through. I know it must be really tough. Keep in mind that post-production on shows doesn't even start for a while. The airing doesn't, you know, whatever you're upset about today, probably nothing's going to be done about it anyway. So I just want you to be okay and know that we're here to support you as in any way we can.
Dave, how dare he express care and concern?
One of the things that continues to happen now is Joe's trying to get copies of the paperwork that he signed because he never got them. Joe goes to the casting offices, and according to Joe, they have, apparently in broad daylight, a list of the contestants from the series and the order in which they're going to be eliminated just hanging there for Joe to take a picture of.
This is the least adept group of people when it comes to scamming contestants.
Yeah.
And he just goes like on a diatribe while he's filming this on his cell phone, just repeating, I want copies of my contract. I want copies of my contract. And this like really intense. And like, frankly, I would be, if I worked there, afraid or feel threatened. But the face-off people are just very calm. Like, you need to leave.
I want copies of my contracts. Sir, I want copies of my contracts.
Can you please step outside?
I want copies of my contracts.
You're trespassing right
now. You know
what?
I need copies of my contracts, and I actually asked for copies of my contracts on several occasions.
Okay.
Have you ever given them
to me? Sir, can you please step outside? We'll talk about this outside.
No. I want copies of my contracts.
Sir, you're trespassing. This is a private building.
I know it's a private building, but I want copies of my contracts.
Okay, I understand. Can you please step outside?
And somehow he thinks this makes him look good.
They try to get a restraining order against Joe. So they go to the hearing. Joe says that the production's actions on the night that he left the set were contrary to the claims that his health and well-being were a priority. I was really conflicted about this because part of me is like, yeah, if you're in the middle of a freakout and you're feeling threatened and you just want to get away and people are not letting you get away, I get why you would be upset by that. But I also kind of felt myself thinking like, don't they probably feel like they maybe have some sort of liability? And what if he got like run over?
I certainly feel like they've likely felt some sort of liability to make sure he got somewhere safely. And for all we know, they were trying to coax him to get in the van so they could drive him somewhere to safety. But he has a reenactment of the chase. And he has this guy chasing him who's like tubby and kind of running like a Teletubby and like has to stop and like catch his breath.
Well, and then allegedly they stop chasing him on foot and then they get a couple vans and go after him. Props to Joe if he was actually able to run for 4 miles though.
4 miles is a long distance to run with the level of like arm flailing and complete panic. And they go and find security camera footage from businesses that purports to show him running by and being chased by these vans.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, in fact, see him running by. And then, like, a little bit later, some vans drive by. It's not totally clear that these two things are connected to each other. The vans are well behind him, but he certainly has footage of himself running.
Yeah, I had the same thought. Like, he's fully out of the frame, I think, before you see the vans.
And they're in two different lanes, so it kind of just seems like vans that are driving down the road. They very well could be the production company, but it wasn't the rock solid evidence, I think, that he's saying. You never see license plates, like it's all blurry, gritty security camera footage.
A week later, Dwight announces that the winner of season 3 will be chosen live by the American public on Halloween night. But Jerry supposedly calls Joe and says, oh, I was already at the finale. Like, they taped that in advance.
He insists that this show was rigged and that this woman, Laura Tyler, was pre-chosen to win. And then she doesn't win. And that's also somehow proof that it was rigged.
Right. So the court throws out the restraining order, but Joe and Steven are still pissed. So the next thing that they try is arbitration for financial damages. Steven says that they're pursuing arbitration because it's about the unfairness that Joe was not able to participate on the show.
The show he ran away from. And the arbitrator clearly knows what's up.
Yeah. They play this audio that I'm guessing they didn't legally record.
I don't know what the laws are in California, but...
Yeah.
He's very nice. He's very polite. But he knows what's up.
I don't question for one second what you consider to be unfair and about what occurred and being taken advantage. But what I'm trying to tell you is that's an entirely different basis, and you're not... And
let's move forward. Tell me what you think I should do.
I think you should cut your losses.
And do what? Walk out of here? Say goodbye?
I hate to say it, but yes.
Life isn't fair, Buttercup.
And we go from that to this breathless narration.
This judge was not trying to come to a mediation between two parties. He was trying to scare Joe away for good, but he could not, because Joe and Steve saw right through his fake smile and his fake words of politeness. He was nothing but a crook because he stole the fees that Steve and Joe paid to have him mediate between both parties. He was simply not providing a mediation service, but instead, he was trying to scare Joe and Steve away.
And the narrator is like super hot when he's doing this reading too.
Yes.
Like, that guy is earning his paycheck.
No, I'm sure he's been coached.
I wonder how many takes that one took before the guy was just like, fine.
Be offended on my behalf.
Oh, that poor man. If you don't see the world from Joe's reality, you are evil and a crook and bad. And Joe's reality is very different, it seems, from real reality. He walked off the show of his own free will, having decided that he had done what he set out to do.
Yes.
But that's somehow other people's fault now.
So during a lunch break at the mediation, Joe goes to confront Dwight, the producer.
I want him to know what it feels like to be chased by cameras after he's asked them to stop filming and he wants them to go away.
Joe needs to grow the fuck up.
Joe really does. Joe is like a 14-year-old girl with like a GeoCities website who's like really, really pissed off at Janet. How dare Janet wear the same dress to prom?
We see video of Joe intentionally going into this like break room, and Dwight is there getting some food on a plate, and Dwight just looks like weary about the whole situation.
Dwight, how does it feel to be recorded when you don't want to be?
What are you doing?
How can I let you just walk away without answering this question?
Are you harassing me right now?
No, Dwight, I just walked up to you and I asked you a simple question. I'm not harassing you.
Like, how does Joe not realize that this just makes Joe look bad?
Oh, he looks so bad.
Dwight just tries to, like, walk away and Joe keeps blocking him and starts taunting him and...
Get away from me.
Is this a... What are you going to do about it? Slap me? You going to slap me?
No, I'm not.
Okay,
please,
so what are you going
to do? I'm going to walk around you.
Go for it.
Joe, seriously, step aside.
You go around me. Look, there's a plenty of room.
Really?
Yeah. Go for it.
The narration comes in.
What kind of person chases someone in their car while the other person is on foot? Then, 8 months later, the next time he speaks to this individual, says to that individual, "Are you harassing me?" Only a liar, cheater, someone who manipulates the truth would do something like this.
Like what? Like... walk away from you when you're trying to be confrontational? How dare he?
Right. And he's like all up in his grill. And Dwight, to his credit, stays very calm. I know I'm a woman and whatever, so I probably have a lower threshold for what I would consider threatening than maybe a larger white man would. But it was terrifying if I had been in that situation. I could feel my heart racing just watching it.
To me, it was hard to not identify with Dwight because... I mean, you and I both have experiences with supervising difficult employees. This felt like one of those things where, like, I just want to get away from him.
I had a coworker once who threw a stack of manila envelopes at our boss. It, like, knocked his glasses off, and he just, like, calmly picked up his glasses and put them on and said, like, I think maybe you need to go take a walk. That's what this was.
Yeah.
So, for some reason... like harassing Dwight and other people who produced Face Off wasn't enough. So he goes to a convention where there's other Face Off contestants there and accuses them of defaming him as he is in this documentary defaming them.
The girls that were at the table that were face-off contestants started mocking me under their breath and talking bad about me to the people around them. One of them actually stood up and called me a creeper out loud in public in front of a crowd of people, asked for security, just called me a creeper. Now, I was there to conduct business with people there. That's why I went down there. And when she said that out loud, she defamed me in front of other people I was working with.
Steven goes back in with his cell phone. He starts confronting these special effects artists about what they've said about Joe.
And they're all women. I should add that. They're all women.
Mm-hmm. One of the women who was in season 3 was a girlfriend of one of the contestants from season 2, which is how they say she got onto season 3. And they describe her as...
She is a professional liar, a professional crying woman, and actress.
I have never heard of the profession of being a crying woman. And I'm curious about how much it pays and whether they are hiring.
I know there are cultures where you would like hire people to mourn for you when someone had died.
I suspect that's not what Joe means here, though.
You don't think so?
He just keeps hassling and hassling and hassling. These poor women look like they're about to like cry. He's like following them all over the place and like, this doesn't help your case, Joe. What they say she's lying about is having a restraining order. She was probably looped in under that temporary restraining order that Faceoff had.
Right, because I assume that like applied to the contestants and the set and the production studios and like everything.
Right, because it was while the show was still being filmed. There's also like, they're really upset because one of the women allegedly calls him a creeper.
Yeah.
Like chasing women around a convention center. You are not disproving that.
No. A big portion of the last 5-10 minutes of this is just a bunch of slander about how Jerry sucks.
Yes. Yeah. Just like, I would like to loop in something about my friend of 25 years who is a known pedophile.
Okay. So I wanted to know if you connected these two things.
Okay.
Joe says that he and Steven were from Texas and they met Jerry, it sounds like through some sort of like Facebook special effects group or something. And then they moved to LA and they rented out a room from Jerry.
Right.
And when they were there, Jerry was witnessed sleeping with his 16-year-old cousin.
Yes.
But in the very beginning of this documentary, I mean, we had the clip.
You may say to yourself, why was Joe friends with a pedophile like Jerry Macaluso and an adulterer like Roy Kinnearum? Well, Joe did not know his friends were this way until the investigation began after the tragic events that unfolded on Face Off.
Although you clearly knew about it 25 years ago.
Right. Like, you lived with the guy when this happened when you first moved to LA, which clearly predates you being on this show.
And once again, he's a paragon of virtue because he's putting this information out into the world now because it's his legal obligation to say something about it in case he acts out again.
And Roy, the alleged adulterer with the heavyset girlfriend. Apparently, Roy's big crime is laughing.
Yeah.
Jerry knew I had been cast on the show and went and told Roy what they had planned. And then Roy laughed about it.
How dare you, sir?
Roy told someone named Cleve, and then Cleve tried to get Joe to reveal that he was going to be on the show, even when the producers told him, like, you can't tell anyone you're going to be on the show during the pre-production phase.
Oh, boy. Ow, this hurts.
Well, we also have this statement from Joe.
It's been a little over 2 years and 3 months since I left the show Face Off. And since that night that I was returned home by police after the chase, not one person from Face Off has called me to see if I'm okay. Not one.
You played us the clip.
Hey, Joe, it's Dr. Hogan calling. Sorry about everything you've been going through. I know it must be really tough. I just want you to be okay and know that we're here to support you as in any way we can.
But yeah, nobody ever called.
Nobody ever called. Steven stalks Dwight?
Yes.
After all the name-calling and lies that this man, Dwight D. Smith, has said about my partner, Joe Castro, I saw him in public having lunch with his lover and wanted to approach him and ask him why he had done this. Instead, like the guilty coward that he knows he is, he decided to run and hide inside instead of being a man and confronting me.
Apparently more than once?
Yes.
I saw him again in a new spot, so I decided to walk up to him again, but his lover got up first, and then he quickly got up and ran away from me.
And that's somehow proof that they're bad?
Well, it's proof because...
he's a proclaimed heterosexual, secretly having lunch with his lover.
Like, the dude goes to lunch with a man, and that means that that person is his lover, and that also means he's bad.
Well, I'm like, you're in a gay relationship.
Right.
You know the kind of shit that people put up with in the LGBTQ community, and you're trying to out someone?
Isn't that, like, super, super not cool?
I would think so.
That's really, really a shitty thing you're doing there, Joe.
Mm-hmm. We get told that Joe made 4 feature films, and his films play at festivals around the world, and he's won 35 prizes, including some sort of Guinness World Record. I don't know for what. Probably nothing related to film.
Probably, like, dude who confronts the most people with his cell phone.
He won some sort of, like, awkward run 4-mile dash.
While being chased by a Teletubby.
Yeah.
He kind of concludes it talking about there's 4 kinds of people.
There are those that give their lives to serve their country. There are those that give their entire work life to help others live in the health community, doctors, nurses. There are those that dedicate their life to perfecting their craft of entertainment, laughter, acting, anything that would entertain us and take us out of the daily trials and tribulations of life. And then there are people like Dwight D. Smith. This is the kind of person that he's out for himself. He is out to benefit from the failure of others.
So there's like 4 professions in the world?
There's the military and police, there's healthcare, there's entertainers, and then there's assholes.
People like Dwight D. Smith, proclaimed heterosexuals having lunch with a man. And this will make you second guess wanting to be on a reality television show.
This will make you second guess having a podcast about bad documentaries.
It is true that we both had to give hours of our lives for this so that you do not have to. I question if we really have to. I'm not totally sure who has the gun to our head on this podcast.
Maybe nobody has to.
I think we might want to rethink life choices right now. Wowzers.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dave, it's time where we discuss, what did you learn?
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I learned that contestants of Face Off stay at the Courtyard Marriott Burbank.
A luxurious place, I'm sure.
Kind of disappointing. The biggest thing, though, that I learned, and that I would love for Joe to learn, is that Joe is not the first man on the moon. Joe is not the assassination of JFK.
Nope.
Joe went on a reality show. This is not worthy of a conspiracy of the level that Joe seems to think this is. He has built years of his life around the fact that he got pissed and walked off a reality TV show.
And the person that he alleges they predetermined was going to win didn't even win the show.
He needs to just be like put in a room and played the Let It Go song on repeat.
Yes.
I honestly hope that Joe is in a better mental state and has better mental health than I'm worried he had during this period of his life, because this is messed up.
This documentary was troubling.
Well, it was very much like, look at all these people who are fucked up and wrong and evil and did bad stuff to me. And it's like, just move on, dude.
Right. You didn't win a stupid reality show that you chose not to participate in any further.
What did you learn?
Oh, God. So I learned that it is possible for a person's conspiracy-laden Facebook rant to become sentient and form itself into a documentary that I know you said you were bored. I honestly kind of had popcorn. It was kind of like, I'm here for this. I learned a troubling truth about myself, I guess. That people sort of like unhinged conspiracy ranting is something that might entertain me a little bit. I also learned that there are four kinds of people in the world, and apparently I guess I am someone like Dwight D. Smith because I'm neither in the military, in healthcare, or in the entertainment industry. Or am I?
See, now that you're doing a podcast.
Yes. Oh, phew. I was worried. I was worried I had no soul.
The only way to make sure that you're not an asshole in 2019 is to have a podcast.
Right. You have to do it. This is the gun to our head.
Well, maybe it is. It's like the lowest possible threshold for being an entertainer.
We entertain all three of you.
Right.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Mom, I'm 100% confident my mom is not listening.
Oh, I'm 1,000% confident my mom's not.
I feel confident your mom doesn't know what a podcast is.
All right. Well, Jamie, you've done it again.
I have a gift. Do not question the gift.
My only request would be that the next time you find something for us to watch, it's under an hour.
No promises. I cannot predict what will flow through me as I search for these wonderful pieces of filmmaking.
Well, far be it from me to interfere with the use of your talents. Other people who use their talents include Tomb Dragomir. He is the creator of our theme song, which is Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. And we also want to give shout outs to our friends at The Projection Booth, a great, much more serious podcast that does deep dives into movies, and 6 Foot Plus, which has a lot of great independent music that you should check out. And thank you again, Jamie, for doing another episode with me. It's always a treat to see what you inflict upon us and then discuss it with you.
You have to do something to keep a marriage interesting. I don't think this is what they mean, though.
Well, I am honestly relieved that this podcast has helped elevate you one step above the asshole level.
That is good. Thank you for that.
Maybe over the next 20 years, we can deepen our entertainment connections.
Maybe Bradley Cooper will discover us.
Yeah, I think it's too late for either of us to be in the military or become doctors.
Yeah, that ship sailed.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll be back at you in a couple weeks with a new episode. Until then, I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt.
Take care.
Never say die!
Do you have a problem with me, huh?